Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in the East County Wellness Center in El Cajon. Today, we'll tell you about some new laws for drivers in California taking effect in 2016. On our Capitol Report, we'll have details on funding in the appropriations bill passed by Congress that will benefit the San Diego region. Learn why the University of California has divested itself from private prison corporations. We'll have the latest legal update on the lawsuit over in Alpine High School and some good news for rural residents about a new air ambulance stationed at the Viejas Reservation in East County. From Public News Service, hear why critics are saying California isn't doing enough to combat smoking. On sports, we'll have the outcome of the Holiday Bowl, and then on Vines and Wines, hear about some local wineries that have just won big awards to help grow the Ramona region's reputation as a winemaking destination. And then on Destination East County, hear about some festive New Year's parties, Martin Luther King Day celebrations, a guided mountain bike ride, an art show, and other activities here in East County. On Bookshelf, we'll re-air our interview today with Don Harrison on his book, Schlepping Across the West, There's a Jewish Story Everywhere. We'll have information on some highway tragedies locally over the holiday weekend, plus news about efforts to persuade President Obama to declare some new national monuments in California's desert. And finally, on Tribal Beat, we'll replay our interview with Nori Robbins, an educator who is helping to bring science to Native American children that can ultimately help them to help their tribes. Stay tuned for these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Show, where East County matters. And to all of our listeners, we wish you a very happy New Year. New laws are taking effect in 2016 that will impact drivers in California. Here are the details provided by the Department of Motor Vehicles. It will be illegal to wear earbuds or headphones in both ears while you're driving a vehicle or bicycle starting January 1st, except for emergency vehicles and heavy equipment. If you have outstanding traffic tickets and you missed a court appearance, you may be eligible for amnesty. You can apply if you haven't made any payments since September 30th to a collection program for fines or bail that was already due. And also, payment of fines, bail, or other penalties is no longer required for a judge to remove a civil assessment of $300 against any defendant who fails to appear in court. Pedicab drivers will now need to meet new safety requirements and financial responsibilities for pedicabs, but also the new law allows pedicab passengers to consume alcohol on board under certain circumstances. If you buy a used car from a used car dealer that provides financing, the dealer has to inform you if the vehicle has tracking and starter interrupt technology installed, which can enable the dealer or lender to find and disable the vehicle if you miss a payment. The new law also requires that vehicle owners be notified before such technology can be used to disable or repossess your car. You must be 16 years or older to operate a motorized skateboard starting next year, and it's a crime to operate one while under the influence of drugs or alcohol. You also have to wear a bicycle helmet, wear safety gear to be visible after dark, and operate only on roads with a speed limit of 35 miles an hour or less. Electric bicycle riders will be able to use roads similar to other bicycle riders, though local governments can add additional regulations if safety concerns arise on specific paths or public trails. Transportation network companies such as Uber that connect passengers to drivers using personal vehicles are going to have to provide a report on the driver's public record and immediately notify the DMV of any moving violations, accidents, or license suspensions. When you apply for a driver's license or a California ID card, or you submit a change of address to the DMV, you will automatically be registered to vote. This law will take effect after the Secretary of State adopts certain regulations to implement the new law and the legislature appropriates the funds. And last but not least, starting on July 1st next year, applicants for a new driver's license or state ID will have to provide proof of California residency to comply with a new federal requirement. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital.
This is Leon Thompson with the Capitol Report. An omnibus appropriations bill passed Congress and was signed by President Obama earlier this month, avoiding a government shutdown. Among local representatives, only Republican Duncan Hunter voted no. Democrats Susan Davis, Juan Vargas, and Scott Peters joined with Republican Daryl Eisen voting yes. Congresswoman Davis says the bill contained many San Diego priorities focusing on the middle class, as well as critical investments for medical research, innovation, education, infrastructure, and support for jobs in our region. Here are some of the details. The measure provides $32 billion for medical research funded by the National Institute of Health, including about $800 million for medical research here in the San Diego region. The spending bill also provides funds for NASSCO to build the Navy's next ship, supporting over 4,000 jobs. The bill also boosts funding by $17 million for schools near military installations. In addition, the measure provides a big boost to renewable energy by extending the wind production tax credit through 2019 and the solar investment tax credit through 2021. Extension of the solar tax credit is estimated to create 61,000 jobs nationwide in just 1 year, and San Diego is a leading hub for growth in the solar energy industry. Research and development of new clean energy and energy efficiency technologies also got an 8% budget increase for 2016. The measure provides $187 million for grants to help hire law enforcement, a $7 million increase over 2015. Working families will also benefit from an $86 million increase in funding for the Workforce Innovation and Opportunities Act, which Congresswoman Davis led efforts to push through Congress. San Diego will also benefit from restoration of grants to repair infrastructure, including improvements at San Diego Port.
The University of California has divested over $25 million of its holdings in private prison corporations in response to a resolution by the Africans Black Coalition, a student advocacy group. Camilla Moore, an organizer with the coalition, says the goals of the private prison industry are to profit from the incarceration, labor, and rehabilitative treatment of Black and immigrant lives. She adds that by selling its shares in private prison companies, the UC system has sent a message that it is against human rights abuses, the Daily Bruin reports. The rise of private prisons in modern times began in 1984 and has mushroomed since then. According to the U.S. Justice Department, by 2013, private prisons were housing over 19% of all federal prisoners and nearly 7% of state prisoners, reaping in billions of dollars of revenues. Private prison corporations also operate immigrant detention facilities, with over 23,000 immigrants now behind bars. Opponents claim private prisons amount to modern forms of slavery. A UC Berkeley study has found private prisons have more minority prisoners than public prisons do. Nationwide, more Black men are in correctional facilities today than were enslaved before the Civil War. Almost 40% of all prisoners in the U.S. today are Black, although Black Americans make up only 13% of the population. Pablo Paez, vice president of corporations for the GEO Group, a private prison corporation, called the UC divestiture action politically motivated and claims it advances what he calls the inaccurate notion that private prisons are somehow unaccountable, the Los Angeles Times reports. But many of the advantages touted by supporters of private prison systems have been shown to be false or, at best, highly questionable. Advocates of private prisons claimed they would save states and the federal government money, but a study by the U.S. Bureau of Justice Statistics found those cost savings have simply not materialized. The American Civil Liberties Union conducted a study which found private prisons to be more costly, as well as more violent and less accountable than public prisons, actually contributing to the increase in mass incarcerations. Private prisons tend to reject prisoners who would cost the most to house also. Moreover, any cost savings has sometimes come through cutting security, occasionally with disastrous results. Escapees from a prison in Arizona went on a violent spree that included a shootout with police as well as kidnapping and murder of a vacationing couple. One nationwide study found assaults on guards by inmates were 49% more frequent in private prisons than in government-run prisons, while assaults on fellow inmates occurred 65% more often in private prisons than public ones. The U.S. currently has the highest number of people in prison of any nation on earth. Although violent crime has dropped 20% since 1991, the number of people incarcerated has grown by 50%, a study on the prison industrial complex found. Companies that operate private prisons, such as Corrections Corporation of America, the GEO Group, and Management and Training Corporation, have spent at least $45 million on campaign donations and lobbyists in the past 10 years in what has become known as the prison industrial complex. These private prison corporations have made hefty donations to organizations, such as the American Legislative Council, or ALEC, which has advocated for state legislatures to adopt measures to put more people behind bars, such as the Three Strikes Law in California. The private prison operators also profit off inmate labor, paying far below minimum wage for manufacturing and service jobs. The products and services of low-paid inmates are used by corporations such as McDonald's. Wall Street has also taken notice, with big banks, such as Wells Fargo, investing heavily in the private prison industry. One private prison operator of juvenile facilities, Mid-Atlantic Youth Services Corporation, was found guilty in a corruption scandal of paying two judges $2.8 million to send 2,000 children to its facilities for crimes such as trespassing in vacant buildings and stealing DVDs from Walmart. Corrections Corporation of America once built a prison in California without even having a contract with the state at the time. An official for the company was infamously quoted as saying, "If we build it, they will come." Some states have taken action to rein in private prison operators. Illinois has outlawed outsourcing to private prisons completely. North Dakota banned exporting prisoners out of state, and New Mexico passed a law to transfer supervision of private prisons back to the state Secretary of Corrections, requiring that private prisons meet the same standards as public ones. Some major religious groups have called for a halt to building private prisons, including the United Methodist Church, the Presbyterian Church USA, and the Catholic Bishops of the South. A lack of educational opportunities can increase poverty, and with it, the prospect of crimes driven by desperation. And yet, in the past 3 decades, California has built over 20 prisons, but only 2 University of California campuses, and 1 California State University. While state spending on prisons has skyrocketed by nearly 47% since 1980, investment in higher education, ironically, has been cut by 13%. UC is not the first educational institution to divest from private prison corporations. Columbia University did so in June in response to a student campaign and protests, the Los Angeles Times reports. Anthony Williams, prison divestment communications director for the African Black Coalition, applauds the UC action. He states, "This decision is not just important for black people, as private prisons especially target communities of color, but they also target low-income earning members of the community," Williams concludes. "It is not just a race issue, but a human rights issue." Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Just in time for Christmas, Superior Court Judge Joel Pressman issued a decision in the Alpine High School case that gave neither side what it wanted. The judge denied Grossmont Union High School District's motions to dismiss the case, but also denied a request from Alpine Union School District and Alpine taxpayers to issue a summary judgment in their favor. Judge Pressman did concur that an appeals court ruling found Grossmont made a promise to build a high school in bond measures approved by voters. However, that promise hinges on whether or not the enrollment trigger was met or not. Pressman wrote, "The court finds that Alpine taxpayers have not met the burden on summary adjudication to show that the enrollment trigger has indeed been met." He added that factual questions remain as to the proper interpretation of Proposition U language, including whether the trigger is intended to be once and for all time or is an ongoing requirement. "That issue and others should best be determined at trial," Judge Pressman concluded. A status conference to set a trial date is scheduled for January 8th. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
Response time is critical during medical emergencies, and for residents in rural areas of East County, that response time has now been improved, thanks to an air ambulance being stationed at the Viejas Indian Reservation in Alpine. The new air ambulance helicopter provided by Reach Air Medical Services will serve tribal members as well as people in the surrounding region, including residents and motorists traveling the highways in San Diego's East County. Placement of this helicopter was the result of many years of planning between Reach, which is headquartered in Northern California, the leadership of the Viejas Band of Kumeyaay Indians, and the Viejas Fire Department. Tribal Chairman Robert Welch says community health and safety has always been a top priority for the Viejas tribal government. He adds, "Reach offers our tribal community as well as our neighboring rural communities the necessary life-saving transport services vital to critically injured and ill patients." Fire Chief Don Butts says the culmination of these efforts means that many thousands of residents and visitors in this area will have improved access to critical care air transport services. We look forward to this partnership bringing an improved quality of life to our community, he adds. The aircraft chosen to serve this area is an Airbus EC-135 helicopter with dual engines and IFR capability. That means it can fly when some aircraft are grounded due to weather. It flies with speeds up to 150 miles an hour and has the capacity to carry a flight crew and patient, as well as even a family member on board whenever possible. The crew is equipped with night vision goggles to enhance safety for flights after dark. This helicopter will serve as a backup to Reach Air ambulance bases providing service from San Diego, Riverside, and Imperial counties. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
Anti-smoking advocates are pressing for a $2 a pack tobacco tax in the wake of a recent report that says California is seriously shortchanging smoking cessation programs. The annual report from the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, called Broken Promises to Our Children, monitors how states spend the billions from the tobacco settlement of 1998. It found that California spends $65.6 million a year, which is just 18% of what the Centers for Disease Control recommend. Jim Knox with the American Cancer Society says what's worse, that money comes from the existing state tobacco tax, not from the tobacco settlement.
Back in the late 1990s, the California legislature and then Governor Gray Davis decided to use the money to get the state out of a budget hole. And now the annual payments just pay off the debt on the loan they took out back then to balance the state budget.
The report did have some good news. Only 12.5% of adult Californians smoke, compared to 16.8% across the country. John Schachter with the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids says the tobacco companies spend almost $10 in marketing for every dollar the Golden State spends on smoking cessation efforts, and that ratio is 20 to 1 nationally.
We've made so much progress that people and legislators and policymakers may think the battle is over. But regardless of what states are doing, and unfortunately they're doing a lot less than they should be, the industry is not letting up.
A coalition of health groups called Save Lives California is gathering signatures to put a measure on the ballot that would raise the tobacco tax by $2 a pack and dedicate that money to smoking cessation programs and to shore up Medi-Cal, the state's health insurance program for low-income families and the disabled. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
This is Liz Alger with a sports report for East County Magazine here on KNSJ. Everyone always worries that San Diego State will be bothered by the time difference when they travel to Aloha Stadium. Rashad Penny proved them wrong right away. The special teams player of the year returned the ball 103 yards on the opening kickoff in the Hawaii Bowl against the University of Cincinnati to give the Aztecs a 7-0 lead. Starting quarterback Maxwell Smith's leg wasn't healed enough to start in the bowl game as he had hoped, but that didn't faze Christian Chapman. The freshman quarterback, playing in his first bowl game, rolled out and fired to Michael Holder wide open in the end zone to give the Aztecs a 14-0 lead. It was still the first quarter. In the second quarter, SDSU ran an option pass play of their own in which Danelle Pumphrey connected with Dakota Gordon for the score. 21-0 Aztecs. In the second half, the slaughter continued. The Aztecs throwed a ridiculous fake field goal pass attempt by the Bearcats and took it all the way back down the field where Gordon scored his second touchdown of the game for a 28-0 Aztecs lead. The Aztecs weren't done yet. Pumphrey easily ran ahead for the score and it was 35-0 Aztecs with 11.5 minutes left in the game. The defense got in on the front too. Defensive end Alex Barrett intercepted the ball for a pitch six to bring the score to 42-0 Aztecs. The Bearcats would tally on a Mike Boone run, but that would be all they can muster. SDSU doesn't get the shutout, but they take the Hawaii Bowl 42-7 to cap off an excellent season.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. This is Miriam Raftery. Three Ramona wineries took home top honors in Vineyard and Winery Management's 25th Annual Grand Harvest Awards this month. The international competition in Santa Rosa, California, attracted 1,500 entries from as far away as New Zealand. Ramona Ranch Winery took home a Best of Class award, as well as gold and silver. Altipiano Vineyard and Winery took home two silvers and a bronze. Although the San Diego region is best known for its red wines, Lenora Winery, also from Ramona, won a pair of silver awards for its white wines, as well as a bronze for a Cabernet Sauvignon. The judges included winemakers, wine buyers, distributors, media personnel, and other wine industry professionals. Grand Harvest Award spokesperson Christopher Sawyer, a sommelier and wine educator based in Sonoma County, said, "For decades, we have been trying to interpret the styles of wines made in America. Now, thanks to the use of new technology and fruit from more mature vines, the unique flavor profiles are becoming more defined." It's exciting to see the diverse list of winners from special regions across the nation, the wine connoisseur concluded. Places like Ramona, which is fast emerging, is a leading wine-tasting destination. You can savor the full results from the competition at winecompetitions.com.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson. Bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes New Year's celebrations and live music across our region. Plus, we'll have previews of coming attractions, including some activities to start off the new year, from a guided mountain bike ride with a ranger at Mission Trails to the opening of trout season at Santee Lakes, and Martin Luther King Jr. commemorative events. So stay tuned for all these events and more.
Here are this week's major events.
The San Vicente Resort at San Diego Country Estates in Ramona is holding a New Year's Eve celebration with buffet dinner, including carving station and filet mignon, decadent desserts, and more. Entertainment includes a DJ and dance music in the San Vicente Room, plus live music with classic buzz at the Par Lounge and Deck, where you can count down to midnight with a party hat, favors, and a champagne toast. For reservations and rates, visit San Diego Country Estate site at sdcea.net.
The German American Societies of San Diego invite you to ring in the new year during a gala at their headquarters in El Cajon on Wednesday, December 31st. Guests are encouraged to dress up and enjoy dinner and dessert, music by the Bluebirds Show Band to put you in a dancing mood, party favors, a midnight snack, and champagne. For tickets and more information, visit germanclubsandiego.org.
The Hakumba Hot Springs Spa and Resort will host a masquerade New Year's Eve party. Festivities will include a New Year's Eve happy hour, dinner, karaoke, and balloon drop. Special packages are available for those who want to stay over at the Hot Springs Resort. For reservations, visit hakumbaresort.com.
Nestled inside Cleveland National Forest in Julian, the historic Pine Hills Lodge Pub will ring in the new year with an event starting at 9 p.m. on December 31st. For reservations or details, you can call 760-765-1100 or check the julianca.com calendar.
The Viejas Resort and Casino will host a New Year's Eve celebration that includes live music, dancing, food, and signature drinks, and a ball drop reminiscent of the famed Times Square event. This year's party includes live music in the park by Rising Star, as well as poolside VIP seating, and new this year, special seating in the opulent new Oak Ballroom. For ticket options and details, visit viejas.com. Discounts on Uber rides are also available.
Now for a preview of coming attractions. Mission Trails Regional Park invites you to join a guided mountain bike nature ride on January 2nd from 9 a.m. to 11 a.m. Suitable for beginners and families, this will be the first in a series of progressive rides with a ranger. Meet at the East Fortuna Staging Area parking lot at the west end of Mass Boulevard. Volunteers with the San Diego Mountain Biking Association will be on hand to also help you make adjustments to your bike if needed. Each ride will increase in length and let you learn new skills while discovering the many trails in the park. Be sure to bring water, sunscreen, and snacks, and for details, you can visit mtrp.org.
Jefferson Washington, a local blues and folk musician, will perform at the San Pasqual Winery Tasting Room in La Mesa on January 2nd from 7 until 10 p.m. His music showcases a blend of American roots-style music with themes of love, loss, travel, and mysticism with foot stomping and storytelling. There's no cover charge. Wine, cheese, and crackers are available for purchase. Learn more at sanpasqualwinery.com.
Sarah Petit's singing has been likened to June Carter and Dolly Parton. On January 5th from 6:30 to 7:30 p.m., she will perform a free concert at the Rancho San Diego Library in El Cajon as part of the County Library System's Acoustic Showcase series. Petit's music blends country, folk, bluegrass, and mountain music with flashes of pop and rock. She's been called a rock and honky-tonkin' delight by one reviewer. To learn more or hear samples, you can visit the San Diego County Library website, sdcls.homestead.com.
The Mission Trails Regional Park Foundation presents Visions, an exhibition featuring six award-winning artists. Their colorful works celebrating nature will be on display in the Mission Trails Regional Park Visitor Center Art Gallery from January 2nd to the 29th. The public is also cordially invited to a reception in honor of the artists on Sunday, January 10th, 2016, from 1 until 4 p.m. For directions, visit mtrp.org.
Santee Lakes will hold the reopening of its trout fishing season on January 16th and 17th. The lakes have been stocked with 2,000 pounds of rainbow trout, including some weighing up to 12 pounds. Prizes will be awarded for the five biggest trout caught, and for those who reel in a five-pounder or above, you will be entered in a drawing to win a cabin vacation grand prize. For more information, visit santeelakes.com.
The San Diego Bluegrass Society hosts a jam session and open microphone night plus pickup bands on the second Tuesday of each month at Fuddruckers, located at Grossmont Center in La Mesa. The next session will be Tuesday, January 12th from 6:30 to 9:30. For more information, you can visit sandiegobluegrass.org.
The Martin Luther King Jr. Community Breakfast will be held on January 18th at 7 a.m. at the Jacobs Center. The featured speaker will be Reverend Richard Lawrence, a longtime civil rights advocate who marched with Dr. King to desegregate Chicago and participated in the Selma March. This event is organized by the United African American Ministerial Action Council. For tickets, you can visit uaamac.org. Or for directions, you can visit thejacobscenter.org.
As part of a week of Martin Luther King Jr. commemoration, the Table United Church of Christ of La Mesa on Kelton Avenue, La Mesa, will present a showing of the film 12 Years a Slave on Sunday, January 16th from 1:30 until 4:30 p.m. This free film showing is hosted by the San Diego Partnership of UCC Churches. For more information, you can visit tableucc.com. Southern California's largest outdoor ice rink remains open through January 20th at the Viejas Outlet Center in Alpine, which also has a water show. For more information, go to viejas.com/ice rink. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website or Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Don Harrison, author of Schlepping Through the American West, There's a Jewish Story Everywhere. My guest, a seasoned journalist, is also editor and publisher of San Diego Jewish World, an online newspaper that serves the San Diego Jewish community and serves Jews around the world. So welcome, Don. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thank you so much, Raina, for having me.
Let's start with your history. I know that since 1986, you've been writing Jewish stories about events, people, and places not only in San Diego, but in the rest of the country and the world. How did you get started writing Jewish stories?
Well, I had been a journalist before. I had been the political writer for the San Diego Union. And then I got into public relations and found myself missing journalism. About the same time, my daughter, Sandy, had her bat mitzvah. And I had come from a family that wasn't all that involved with the Jewish community, and I never had a bar mitzvah as a kid. And they have a ceremony where they pass down the Torah from generation to generation. And as I watched it go briefly into my arms and then to her arms, I thought, wow, she's inherited a heritage that I don't have. I want to learn more about this. And I thought, well, I'm a reporter, I'm a journalist. The best way I can learn is if I start writing stories about the Jewish community. And I volunteered to write stories for one of the Jewish newspapers, the San Diego Jewish Press Heritage, which ultimately I became the editor-in-chief and later the publisher of.
And do you remember your first Jewish story?
Yes. Actually, it was a trialogue among three rabbis from the different movements. One was a rabbi from the Orthodox Beth Jacob. His name was Rabbi Langer. The other one was a rabbi from the conservative Tiferet Israel, and that was Aaron Gold. And the third one was from the Reform Congregation Temple Emmanuel, and that was Rabbi Marty Lawson. And they held forth about the differences among the movements, and it ran as a front-page story, not in the Heritage. This was before I started with the Heritage. It was in the competitive paper, which was then called, I think, San Diego Israel Today or something like that.
Okay, so you fell in love with writing those stories.
Yeah, it was great. It really was. And ever since, I've always looked for Jewish angles to stories. And as a regional newspaper might ask for what's the El Cajon angle or the East County angle, I ask what's the Jewish angle.
Well, in Schlepping Through the American West, you and your grandson go on a 3,600-mile round-trip odyssey from San Diego to Alberta, Canada, discovering Jewish stories and links. How did that trip get started, and why the American West?
Well, I think it's kind of fascinating that here in San Diego, we have two northbound interstate freeways that actually cross. I-5, which goes north along the coast, and I-15. And I thought, well, that makes for an interesting route, wouldn't it, if you were to go up the I-15 all the way to Canada and then perhaps across, and then come down to the 5 and end up at the same place. And I don't know why I became fixated on that, but I thought, gee, that would be a fun trip. And I asked Shore if he would like to go with me and see what we could find, and Shore's my grandson, and he said yes.
So when you took this trip, did you have it preset where you'd go or how you would dig up these stories, or was that spontaneous?
Well, it was a little of each. In some cases, we actually wrote ahead and knew that we wanted to go there and hoped that we could arrange interviews. In other places, it was just serendipitous. For example, one story I wrote was at an Indian reservation, the Blackfoot Indian Reservation, and we went into a trading post. I happened to pick up a book there that was written by one of the members of the Blackfoot Indians, and found it so fascinating that I decided to devote a column or a story to that.
And you found a Jewish angle for that.
Well, the Jewish angle was the comparison, because they believe that, for example, mice can talk. They don't necessarily believe, but in their legends, the mice talk. And they also have ceremonies where they have their tobacco pipe and they
They wave it in the directions of the four directions and up and down. Mm-hmm. And I found similarities to Judaism in that. We have in Judaism in the Torah, the story of a donkey who was carrying a passenger and is stopped by an angel of the Lord and won't move. And the fellow riding him starts whacking him. And the donkey looks up and says, "Why are you hitting me? You know, haven't I always been good?" And so it's not all that amazing to have a story about a talking animal in a religious text. And similarly, we have a ceremony in Judaism where we wave our lulavs during the holiday of Sukkot and to the different directions. So it was a nice place to find a comparison.
Interesting. So the book is both a guidebook and it's a collection of tales. Could you share with us right now a little bit of your favorite tale?
Well, I don't know if it's my favorite.
One of your favorites.
One of my favorite. But one of the places that we went to was in Idaho. Remember, we're going along the Interstate 15, and we found out that the town of Blackfoot, Idaho, had the Potato Museum.
Okay.
And we thought, gee, what? That would be interesting, uh-huh. Potato Museum. So I'll start a little bit of it. About the time that movie star Marilyn Monroe converted to Judaism in association with her marriage to playwright Arthur Miller, potato farmers and marketers in Idaho were talking about how beautiful a woman she was. Quote, "She's the kind of woman who would look good in anything, even a potato sack," said one. "Say, that's a brilliant idea," said another. "Let's see if we can get her to pose for our advertising campaign." They did, and she did, producing a memorable image of Monroe in a burlap bag. As was clear to everyone, she was outstanding in her field. The joke there being that she's standing in a potato field.
Oh, the Monroe, I didn't even get that. I got it now. Thank you.
The Monroe image is just one of the exhibits of the Idaho Potato Museum, which shares crowded quarters in a former railroad depot with the Blackfoot Chamber of Commerce. Here one can learn about the history of the Idaho potatoes, as well as about some of the innovations that have changed the way potatoes are planted and harvested. There are also interesting potato-based collections, such as postage stamps from around the world, featuring potatoes or their lore, an assemblage of Mr. Potato Head toys, and a one-of-a-kind souvenir, a potato signed by former U.S. Vice President Dan Quayle.
Oh, wonderful. It was really fun to read.
Do you remember Dan Quayle and his famous potato gaffe, and he wanted to put an extra E on it?
Yes.
So that's why they got him to sign the potato, and he was a good enough sport to do it.
Great. I know that one of your readers, Rabbi Ben Kamen, mm-hmm. he called you not only the ultimate wandering Jew, but he said you're a highly valued wondering Jew. What other topics besides the themes that you've mentioned, potatoes and history, what other topics do you wonder about in Schlepping Through the American West? What topics do you think are relevant to everyone, no matter what their faith is?
Well, I think most of them are. There were perhaps one or two stories that you might say were almost exclusively Jewish. I dealt with mm-hmm. a Jewish synagogue, obviously, and a Jewish cemetery in two different chapters. But the rest of them really were about Americana. Mm-hmm. And I look at these stories as tapestries, and through these tapestries there might be a Jewish thread here and there. I try to focus on the Jewish thread, but as well to tell the story of the place. So, for example, we went to the Buffalo Preserve up in Montana, the Bison Preserve, I should say properly, because mm-hmm. they aren't really buffaloes. Talked about how Theodore Roosevelt was involved in the conservation of these incredible creatures who were slaughtered, unfortunately, during the 19th century and who mm-hmm. faced extinction, and told about what the experience is like to drive through the National Bison Range and to see these creatures and have them come right up to your car. And at the same time, wove through it the interesting fact, at least to me, that Moise, M-O-I-E-S-E, is the name of the town that the National Bison Range is in. And, of course, I drew the conclusion that Moise was a biblical name or from Moses, mm-hmm. and found out that it was actually the name of Native American who owned the area and who had been given his name by a church. And so my conclusion actually worked out that there was this Jewish thread running through it. And I talked about Theodore Roosevelt and Moses both being conservationists. And there's mm-hmm. a famous Jewish story, we call him Midrashim, about Moses who had a sheep that wandered away from the flock. And he followed the sheep, and he found the sheep drinking from the water. And he realized that the reason that the sheep had left was because he was so thirsty, and he felt sorry for the sheep. And so when he retrieved him, instead of being angry at him, he put him on his shoulders, and he carried him back to the flock. And according to the story, God saw this, and he says, if he treats the sheep so well, he'll also treat the Israelites well, mm-hmm. and he'll be the leader. And so these kinds of stories, you try to weave together as you go to places that are of general sightseeing interest.
It really does sound like a tapestry.
Yeah.
Well, let's go to the global stage for a moment. I know a very hot topic. In any way, does all the unrest and violence in the Middle East affect your writing, your perspective, anything that you're doing?
It's an interesting question. When I say in the subtitle of the book that there's a Jewish story everywhere, I have, you might say, three reasons why I'm able to say that. Israel is one. I mean, everybody in the world, every country in the world, either has relations or refuses to have relations with Israel. And so that offers one, you might say, possible range of stories. Mm-hmm. And the other two kinds of stories is the Bible, which I've just mentioned. The Hebrew scriptures are known throughout the world and, sure. and so forth. And the third thing is that Jews have been a very peripatetic people. We traveled everywhere to a large degree because we were merchants and we would open up new trade routes and open up stores and so forth. And so you can always find from those three themes, some sort of a story. And occasionally the story may well be about Israel. In fact, let's see, I guess it's in Rancho San Diego or El Cajon, I guess, is there's big skyline church. And if you go there, I mean, they're very Israel oriented. They have a wall inside their atrium that looks like the Kotel, the Wailing Wall or the mm-hmm. Western Wall of Jerusalem, where parishioners can stick notes into it. And they have two big pillars in that atrium that are supposed to be the pillars of Solomon. And it's an example of how important those scriptures are, not only to Jews, but to the Western religions.
Wonderful. You really have a lot to show us that's already been there, and we haven't looked at it quite that way. How about East County? Are there any stories that particularly focus in East County that you'd like to share with us?
Well, just briefly, there are some that I've always enjoyed. In La Mesa, for example, one of the landmarks there is Mount Nebo. And, of course, in the Bible, Mount Nebo was the place where Moses looked out over the promised land and then died, and he wasn't allowed to actually go to the promised land. I always wondered about that name, like, mm-hmm. gee, you get to look out, but you don't get to come down the mountain. But I guess the developers were thinking about the other Israelites who would actually go into the promised land and had a great view of it.
So La Mesa is the promised land.
Well, they were, as far as the developers, there was a fellow named Sherman Grable who was a Methodist, and he used that metaphor. In Santee, at the Santee Lakes, it's one of my favorite places to go walking, and I draw inspiration from the way the different species get along. I have pictures of pelicans and cormorants sharing the same rock, and pictures of egrets and herons fishing from the same shore, and an osprey and another egret up in the same tree. And so you get this sort of sense of a multiculturalism at the Santee Lakes. And yet at the same time, you also see flocks of ducks together, mm-hmm. of mud hens together. And so they have their separate cultures, but they also mingle together. And I think of that as a metaphor.
Yeah, I love that metaphor.
And then finally in Lakeside, the old Lakeside hotel was at one point owned by, the whole rancho was owned by Adolph Levi, who was a fellow in Julian, who, if you ever go to the Julian drugstore, there's a plaque on the drugstore that mm-hmm. it was once owned by him. But he also purchased land, and so that area was owned by the Levi family. And so it's just another strand that runs through these tapestries.
Great. Thanks for sharing those.
Sure.
Interesting. One last question. What are you writing next? Will it be more travels from a Jewish American grandfather, or will it be something entirely different?
Well, I have another book that I'm collating now. It's called Schlepping Over the High Seas.
Okay,
and
more schlepping.
I've done a lot of cruising, and just as I have done in the American West, whenever I get to a port, I try to find the Jewish story. And, of course, there are many Jewish stories on the ships. And so, these are tapestries. They are stories about cruising, about the kinds of people you might meet on a cruise ship, about places you might go or the cruise ship might take you. But I always try to find that little Jewish thread within those stories.
And when do you think it'll be available?
Well, I'm guessing sometime next year. It's a matter now of pulling stories from. I've been a journalist for over 50 years, and I'm trying to go back and to find some of those stories that meet the theme. And that takes a little while, and maybe I'll go on a cruise or two between now and then.
Oh, you'll have to go on a cruise. Well, we look forward to seeing it. Our time is up, Don, but thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me. I greatly enjoyed the interview.
For more information on Don Harrison and his work, please visit sdjewishworld.com. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
The holiday weekend claimed several lives in traffic accidents here in East County and San Diego's inland region. 47-year-old Corey Akron was struck by a pickup truck and killed while crossing Naranka Street in Ocahone on Christmas Eve. His friend, a woman pushing a bicycle across the street, was also injured and transported to a hospital. No charges have been filed against the driver, said Lieutenant Szilard with the Ocahone Police Department, who added that alcohol, drugs, and speeding were not factors in the tragedy. Ocahone Police recently launched a pedestrian safety campaign due to the high number of pedestrian fatalities there in recent months. A motorcycle crash claimed the life of 25-year-old Jehan Chung of Chula Vista Saturday afternoon in Jamul. Chung was driving a motorcycle at a high speed westbound on Ote Lakes Road in Jamul, according to witnesses, when he missed a curve and crossed the center line. The motorcycle overturned and he struck a Prius. Chung was thrown beneath the car and his motorcycle continued off the roadway into a field. Paramedics were unable to revive him and he was pronounced dead at the scene. In Santee, a 66-year-old man driving a black Mercedes-Benz the wrong way on State Route 52 on December 28th drove off the road near Oak Canyon west of Mass Boulevard and plunged down a ravine. The driver was ejected from the vehicle, and he sustained fatal injuries, said Officer Tommy Doerr with the California Highway Patrol. The investigation into this accident is ongoing, and the identity of the driver has not yet been released, pending notification of family. So please, folks, be careful out there on the roadways the rest of this holiday season. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
A large group of California religious leaders released a letter to President Barack Obama asking him to use his powers under the Antiquities Act to create 3 new national monuments in the Southern California desert. 100 Latino church leaders from the Assemblies of God Southern Pacific District sent the letter, which urges the creation of the Mojave Trails, Castle Mountains, and Sand to Snow National Monuments. Reverend Jesse Villarreal from the Templo La Hermosa in Coachella says local churches often take youth groups on hikes to these proposed monuments because they are part of God's gift to humanity.
It's a place to relax, to pray, to connect with God and enjoy His beauties and see God through the hands of His creation. It's a place where you can meditate on God's power.
Supporters of the monuments say the area is threatened by proposals to export groundwater from the desert aquifers and from air pollution, rapid community development, and encroachments from renewable energy projects. Maite Arce with the nonprofit Hispanic Access Foundation says Latinos make up nearly 50% of the population in the California desert, so they have an important voice in the protection of public lands.
These communities really see the importance of these monuments to their heritage, to their communities, to future generations, and to their faith.
The clergy join a growing list of monument supporters who have written to the president, including historians, veterans, active duty military, local elected officials, Latino organizations, astronomers, and local business owners. Senator Dianne Feinstein introduced a bill to establish these national monuments earlier this year, but it has not yet been brought to a vote. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is East County Magazine's Tribal Beat, bringing you news for and about our region's Native American communities. This is Leon Thompson with East County Magazine, and my special guest today, and one of my favorite people, is Nori Robbins, who was just inducted into the International Educators Hall of Fame. Can you imagine that? Nori is a biogeologist and worked with the U.S. Geological Survey and was in the Peace Corps, and she taught outdoor science, as she calls it, to inner-city kids in Washington, D.C. And since she's retired in 2001, here in San Diego, she's been teaching science, outdoor science, to children on the Indian reservations here in San Diego. We had a nice long conversation, and here's part of our conversation about San Diego rivers and reservations. You know what I really enjoyed about your lecture was the three rivers.
Ah.
The San Luis Rey.
Uh-huh.
The San Diego, and then the southern,
Sweetwater.
Sweetwater.
Uh-huh.
Which goes into Mexico, right?
Uh-huh. And the Tijuana. Uh-huh.
So basically there's three groups, essentially.
Exactly. The rivers defined the territories of the people. So the Kumeyaay had the San Diego River, and the Luceño had the San Luis Rey River. And the Cupeño had Warner Springs, and the Kahuilla were the desert, were in the desert. Different, but then what would happen is people would separate out and then go along the other rivers. You know, it's an interesting question that you're asking. Those three rivers must have been the rivers that had water all year round.
Of course, the San Luis Rey River was diverted for agricultural purposes.
Well, it went into Lake Henshaw. Right. So all the upper elevation tributaries all flow into Lake Henshaw.
Right.
And then Henshaw. And then, of course, you had Henry Rodriguez and his buddies at the La Jolla Reservation that realized that there were treaty rights that said that their reservations were going to have so many acre feet of water, and they weren't getting it, and they fought it to the Supreme Court and won. And so Lake Henshaw has to release certain amount of acre feet of water to the La Jolla Reservation, but the other reservations downstream didn't fight back in the same way. And so as soon as it leaves the La Jolla Reservation, that water goes into a pipe, and it gets taken to Oceanside.
Oh, my. So then the Paulas and the
right.
Palmas and the Rincons are downstream.
Right.
And they don't get the water that they traditionally did. At one time, there was a flowing river.
I'm working on the San Diego River right now, and there were so many village sites along the San Diego River, it must have been a perennial river. When I got here and started Science Explorers Club, I started with Henry Rodriguez, and I told him I wanted to teach outdoor science to kids on reservations to raise them up to be scientists. And he said, and you want them to be hydrologists, because if you're an Indian, you've got to pay attention to your water quantity and your water quality. And on his reservation, there is water. On the La Jolla Reservation, there is water. And so I thought that was really simple. You know, we'll take the kids into the water, get them wet and dirty, and, you know, they'll turn into hydrologists all by themselves. But then it turned out that that's the only reservation with water in San Diego County. The Mesa Grande Reservation has water during part of the year. And so those kids go into the water. But none of the other reservations. When I went to Campo and I said, I want to get the kids wet and dirty, the education director there, she said to me, well, you won't have any trouble getting them dirty. She said, well, we have a hose. And so they have a hose. But then they had one of the guys who came back, an engineer who came back to the reservation, and he started looking into the ancient way of keeping water on the land. And he worked out the technique that was called rock drop structures. And he built a rock drop structure on the Campo Reservation. And now they have water all the time in a pond. And that water flows a little bit out of the pond. And he got an EPA award for this. And then the next one he built was in Tecate. So the people there have water all year round also.
So what's it like?
Which, the rock drop, the pond?
The rock
pond
drop.
Is, we take the kids to the pond, particularly this month is a World Water Monitoring Day. So all, I'm teaching all the kids on the six reservations. You know, we're looking at the water. We're testing the water, whether it's the hose or it's the pump. You know, the hose, the pump, the pond, or the river, depending upon where the, which reservation I'm at. And so it's very interesting with the kids. This is November, okay? So November, it's getting cool here in San Diego County. And so I take the kids to the pond, test the water, do the pH and the oxygen. And it isn't until, it isn't too long before one kid jumps in and then the next kid jumps in and then all the kids jump into the water. So that's what it is when you have water. The kids at La Jolla do the same thing, you know. You get them to the water to test the water, and it isn't too long before.
Next thing you know.
Jump in the water, and then we jump in the water.
Acting like kids.
Yeah, they're kids. That's right. That's what water
becoming,
is for.
Becoming hydrologists.
That's right, to become hydrologists. The issue is, you know, my dad did that with me, too. He took us to the creek in front of our house that was near our house, and we walked in the creek, and he was a physicist, right? So we were talking about energy transfer from the noise coming from the chemical changes in the water and the noise and the mechanical energy, and that's what he talked about. But I was picking fossils, and I was having fun with fossils in the creek. So Henry said, turn these kids into hydrologists. But then I met the environmental director at the Pala Reservation, and she said, you know, when I retire or when I leave here, we need the next generation to step up. You know, the Pala people need a Pala person to be the environmental director. And she says, I need those kids to start thinking about that. On the La Jolla Reservation, I'm talking hydrology all the time. On the Pala Reservation, I'm talking environmental director, the environmental issues. And on the Pala Reservation, they have, you know, Gregory Mountain Landfill that we're always fighting against. There's those people that were tied to the political system in San Diego that are talking about putting a dump on the sacred mountain of the Luseno people, Gregory Mountain, Tuckwick. So that's a giant environmental issue that's going on with the Luseno people along the San Luis Rey River.
Yes. You ever find artifacts?
So, only on the Barona Reservation, and then we do that with the archaeologists there, with the Barona Museum people, and then if the kids find artifacts, then the archaeologist explains what this is, and then to always put it back where you found it.
Oh.
And so the kids, that's what I teach the kids. I teach the way the Barona people taught me. You find something and you can discuss it, and then you put it back exactly where you found it.
You find shards and pottery?
Yes, they're at Barona because people have been there for a really long time. And also along El Capitan Reservoir where the villages were, you find pottery. You know, you would think I would find pottery at Campo because there was a village there, but we found pottery, a really beautiful piece, and I handed it to one of the kids who didn't understand the importance of what it was that I gave him, and it wasn't too long until it was broken pieces.
Oh, no.
So I have to, you know, I have to learn. I do not know everything. So you don't give a boy a piece of pottery.
Rule number one.
Rule number one.
That was educator and biogeologist Nori Robbins. Stay tuned for more conversations with Nori in coming weeks here on East County Magazine.
This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the East County Wellness Center for our studio space, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement.
We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.